From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
A federal lawsuit filed in New York Monday on behalf of the families of 850 people killed and 1,500 injured in the September 11, 2001 terrorist attacks on the U.S. alleges that Saudi Arabia is partly to blame for the damage caused. RT's Guyan Shichikayan has more.
The lawsuit accuses Saudi officials of helping some of the 9/11 terrorists before the attacks. Remember, 15 of the 19 hijackers were from Saudi Arabia. It accuses Saudi embassy officials of facilitating their stay in the United States. The lawsuit alleges that a Saudi official was even in the same hotel in Virginia with hijackers the night before the attacks. It also claims that members of the Saudi royal family were aware that funds from Saudi charities were being funneled to Al-Qaeda. The lawsuit describes how the purported money was being transferred from the charities to the terrorist organization. This lawsuit was made possible after Congress passed a bill last year that would strip Saudi Arabia of immunity from prosecution. It was the Justice Against Sponsors of Terrorism Act. President Obama vetoed the bill, but Congress had enough votes to override the president's veto, and they did. After many years of pressure from the public, last July, the U.S. government declassified 28 pages from the 9/11 Commission report, which say that some of the 9/11 hijackers received financial support from individuals connected to the Saudi government. Here's President Obama in April of last year.
Jim Clapper, our director of national intelligence, has been going through to make sure that whatever it is that is released is not going to compromise some major national security interest of the United States.
But the 9/11 victims' families, all these years later, are making clear they have no tolerance for secrecy.
Les Jamieson is an activist based in New York City who maintains the website HR14.org. That was the House resolution that was passed, which led to the expose of the missing 28 pages from the government's 9/11 report. We spoke with him via telephone from New York on Wednesday.
This is, again, targeting Saudi Arabia for evidence of funding of aspects of the 9/11 attacks. Much of this evidence is revealed in the 28 pages, and they have other areas of investigations that also corroborate the existence of funding of aspects of the 9/11 attacks traceable to individuals like Prince Bandar, who was the ambassador from Saudi Arabia at the time of the 9/11 attacks, and also several Saudi Arabian charities that were basically front groups that have close ties to the Saudi government.
Yeah, you know, so, in the earlier lawsuit, actually the Obama administration and President Obama essentially addressing it with public statements saying that the doctrine of sovereign immunity was so important and so precious that it couldn't be compromised by allowing people here who were aggrieved by the actions of Saudi Arabia or claimed they were aggrieved to pursue it in court because it would expose Americans to, you know, judicial action all around the country, the U.S. government in particular. At the time that he was saying that, of course, there was a suit taking place in the Southern District of New York against Iran for its alleged role, and because Iran decided that, you know, we can't get justice, this is too ridiculous for words, they didn't defend the suit, and the plaintiffs got a default judgment.
Yes, correct. A few 9/11 family members, in particular, the mother of the individual who was on Flight 93 that Shanksville, Pennsylvania, sued the country of Iran and several entities within Iran, intelligence agencies and so forth. You ready for this? For allegations that a few of the alleged 9/11 hijackers passed through Iran en route to training camps in Afghanistan. So therefore, this was aiding and abetting the 9/11 attacks. That's the essence of the focus of that lawsuit against Iran. Now, why wasn't there the ability for Iran to claim sovereign immunity, just as Saudi Arabia has been doing? Here's the answer. There are a few countries in the world, including Iran, who are on the list of state sponsors of terrorism. Iran is one of those which the U.S. has deemed to include in this list of state sponsors of terrorism.
Since the Carter administration, when they first developed the list.
Exactly. And interestingly, Saudi Arabia is not on that list. So they're considered an upstanding, ally of the United States, which is highly questionable. That's a whole conversation right there, given the behavior of the Saudi monarchy, the autocratic, brutal dictatorship that the monarchy is, and all the record of violations of human rights, violation of women's rights for sure, and of course the Saudi Arabian support, de facto support of the extremist Wahhabi religion, and all the links there to support and funding by the Wahhabi clerics to terrorist jihadi groups throughout the Middle East. Yet, Saudi Arabia is a U.S. ally, so figure that one.
But, the lawsuit that was filed, the most recent lawsuit that was filed on the 20th, lists paragraph 9 of the complaint. For years prior to and on September 11, 2009, Saudi Arabia established, owned, operated, and controlled a series of state-run charity, with the word charity in quotes, organizations, namely, and it lists the Muslim World League, the International Islamic Relief Organization, the Rabida Trust, the World Assembly of Muslim Youth, the Benevolence International Foundation, the Al-Haramain Islamic Foundation, and these two are particularly interesting, the Saudi High Commission for Relief of Bosnia and Herzegovina, the Saudi Joint Relief Committee for Kosovo and Albania, and then finally the Saudi Red Crescent. Now, those two, dealing with Bosnia and Herzegovina on the one hand and Kosovo and Albania on the other, are particularly interesting when you look at first the role the U.S. played during the Clinton administration in destroying Yugoslavia and essentially turning it into these golf course-sized nation states, much of which was smoldering from NATO air raids, and the role that is being alleged that these organizations played in 9/11 and other terrorist activity, including what's going on in Syria and elsewhere now. And the other part that's interesting is, of course, the relationship that was exposed between the Saudis and the Clinton Foundation.
Yes. This is interesting what you raise about these two particular charities, which are basically linked to the Balkan area and, of course, the Balkans war. And that you reference under the Clinton administration, you should know that Michael J. Springman, who was a diplomat, foreign service officer in Saudi Arabia, wrote the book called Visas for Al-Qaeda, in which he depicts how when he was there in Saudi Arabia in the role of administering and issuing visas, back in the late 70s, early 80s, he was forced to give great leniency and bypass the protocols for giving out visas because there was a heavy-duty recruitment campaign of bringing young Saudi men into what at that time was the Mujahideen, being recruited to have the war against Russia within Afghanistan. Now, fast forward, he says, Michael Springman says, many of these same operatives, they were mercenaries basically, were then brought in to the Bosnia-Herzegovina location to fight against, in Kosovo, the Muslims against the government in Czechoslovakia at the time. So there's the connection where the Mujahideen was created in late 70s, early 1980s through the Saudi US CIA alliance in order to disrupt Russia's presence in Afghanistan. Fast forward 10 years to the Bosnian War, and many of these same people were being recruited to go into Kosovo. That's why you're seeing the names of those charity organizations that contain the locations of they're in the Balkans.
And I'm going to read now from the USA Today report on the suit filed on Monday that says the suit named several Saudi Arabian charities, which we just listed, that called alter egos of the government, staffed by the government that ran the terrorist training camps in Afghanistan. Krindler, who's the attorney for the plaintiffs, said the whole world knows they were dirty. The charities worked with Osama bin Laden to open offices in Pakistan and Afghanistan and established Al-Qaeda there. That's where, you know, that's where the corporation was domiciled, if you were going to use those terms. Krindler said also that the kingdom directly funded Al-Qaeda, supported the terrorists by supplying assistance such as passports and transportation, like you just described. And finally, the suit identifies Saudi officials who worked with the hijackers in L.A., San Diego, Sarasota, and D.C. and Virginia in the 18 months prior to the attacks on September 11, 2001.
Right.
So.
Right.
Go ahead.
Right. It's there's this clear line of evidence that the law firm has, and the 9/11 families have been working on compiling for many years, Don, which is quite interesting. All right. They've started this legal effort going back to 2002. We're at now 2017. Okay. So 15 years, there's been an effort on the part of 9/11 family members and their legal representatives to do investigation and compile evidence and scour through the government's papers and then through the declassification of the 28 pages, which occurred last July the 15th. Now there is this trail of evidence that is definitely admissible in court and substantial enough to get a court within the United States to see that, yes, there is evidence that warrants further legal scrutiny and discovery. So what's about to happen is these cases are going to move forward in which the 9/11 families' legal teams are going to start presenting some of this evidence that they've been compiling for the last 15 years. And it's very likely now that they will be able to get to discovery. And once that happens, look out.
Okay? Yeah, that's going to be the interesting part. Let's take a look at the history since 9/11. We've had, of course, almost from the beginning of the investigation, the Bush administration's investigation of itself and of its failures on September 11th, that many consider a whitewash. You've been, working to expose things that were not covered, things that were hidden in the compiling of that report. There was a widely held opinion among people who were opposed the Bush administration, Democrats and others, that there was, if not complicity, at least some kind of a cover-up that was taking place, and many pointing to the relationship between the Bush family and George W. Bush in particular and Osama bin Laden's family. A number of other things, including people being flown out of the country on September 11th when all of the other airplanes were grounded, all of that stuff we have the election of President Obama in 2008, and many people thinking that finally the dirty laundry would be aired, and instead Obama saying, you know, we don't look back, we look forward, and that was it. And then outright opposition and hostility by the Obama administration and Justice Department to the attempt to do exactly what's finally being done, that is to have an airing of all of this in a courtroom. And so that's where we are. Last September, Congress passed JASTA, the Justice Against State Sponsors of Terrorism Act, over Obama's veto. And that allows countries to be sued in terrorism cases, even if the act takes place outside of the U.S., but if it involves any U.S. nationals, U.S. property, or in this case, it takes place on U.S. grounds, ultimately. And so now we have this lawsuit filed. Now we see it going to discovery, and many cans of worms may end up being opened again. There are the close ties of the Clinton Foundation that were exposed to the Saudi government and some other very wealthy Saudi individuals, and also the track record of both, of all three, the Clinton, Bush, and Obama administration with respect to Saudi Arabia, who, as these allegations were being floated, the Saudis became the beneficiaries more and more of U.S. military aid.
All true, all well said. The U.S.-Saudi alliance is very peculiar in that, again, you have this country that's run by a brutal dictatorship, and they're hated by their own people. You ask anybody with knowledge of culture in Saudi Arabia or the Middle East. And yet the U.S. Relates to them like they're trusted and treasured friends of our country. It makes no sense whatsoever. And if how do you explain it? I think there's two reasons. These are oil billionaires running Saudi Arabia, very, very wealthy and powerful. And, of course, they have a great influence, probably the most influence in OPEC on the price of oil. Then secondly, they are the biggest customer of the U.S. weapons industry, especially over the past 10 or 12 years. Under Obama's reign alone, they purchased $115 billion of U.S. weaponry. So what's being what's really moving the entire relationship here comes down to those two things. Otherwise, they should absolutely be at the top of the list of state sponsors of terrorism and violators of human rights. So this is a huge, huge hypocrisy that every American must become aware of. Now, secondly, I want to point out that there has been a backlash of opposition to the passage of JASTA by high-level officials in the national security state. And currently, we have none other than John McCain, Senators John McCain and Lindsey Graham, who are on the payroll of the Saudi lobbyists and PR firms to lobby against for an amendment to JASTA, which will take away the provision that lifts sovereign immunity.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
now,
go ahead.
Their reasoning is that, this is very dangerous because there could be a flood of reciprocal lawsuits from other countries where the U.S. has participated in military pursuits, military actions. Now, just think about that. What they're saying is we can now be liable for war crimes, right, crimes against humanity. You know, so right. this is for your audience, which I believe is very progressive, very much anti-war. This is an admission by high-level officials in the U.S. military and security state who oppose JASTA that they do not want to be held accountable for U.S. actions in Iraq, Afghanistan, Somalia, every other place where the U.S. has participated in military actions over the past, even going back to Vietnam. Right. But that said, this is a false accusation on their part that U.S. military members can all of a sudden become vulnerable to a flood of lawsuits, because there are already existing agreements where the U.S. has bases throughout the world. They're called status of forces agreements, and whereby our personnel are compelled to follow the laws of that particular country already. And then take into account the Geneva Conventions and the Nuremberg Principles,
right.
The U.S. is supposed to abide by those guidelines and laws of war,
right.
Period.
That's right. So, in other words, in the simplest netting out of the terms, regardless of how the U.S. treats the principle of sovereign immunity with Saudi Arabia, such war crimes as would be indictable, say, under Nuremberg, are still indictable. And, you know, the fact that they haven't been indicted has very little to do with the grant of sovereign immunity to the Saudis, but rather the exercise of U.S. political and military power. That's the reason that it hasn't happened, and that condition will either prevail or not. What's interesting in that context, by the way, again from the USA Today piece, one of the other lawyers that are working with the plaintiffs in the suit filed on Monday said that the families he represents were grateful to Congress and to President Trump, who the article says has backed their efforts. Andrew Maloney said, "We just hope President Trump continues. We'd like to hear continued expressions of support by the president." Now, you know, Trump is, you know, under massive attack from the intelligence community, from the media, from, of course, the Democratic Party and its regulars and such, on the issue of its relationship with Russia, where they are trying to establish these markers of influence over Trump and his advisors by the Russian government and intelligence community. But in fact, the influence of Saudi Arabia inside the government is much more extensive than anything that's been alleged. In fact, more than anything that could be imagined with the allegations that have been presented. And no one is really reporting on that particular fact. And here, where you have Trump at least not actively opposing in court this lawsuit moving forward, it becomes another rallying point for what people call the deep state against the Trump administration.
Yeah, that's an interesting dynamic between Trump and the deep state, CIA, and in regards to the Trump position on JASTA. It's publicly, you know, stated that he was very much in support of JASTA. He actually criticized Obama for vetoing JASTA. So that establishes his favorable position on it. And where it goes from here, whether he would be vocal in any way, or we don't know. I don't have any indication currently. But the main thing is that the American public be aware that there are attempts in Congress to undermine JASTA, to dilute it and basically render it ineffective. And this is all being engineered by the Saudi government through over 10 big lobbying firms, PR firms, including the Podesta. John Podesta's brother has a big PR firm. He's one of them. And they've gone to such extremes that in a recent campaign, they've recruited U.S. military veterans around the country, giving them all expense paid trips to Washington, leading them to believe that they're just like thanking them for their service and wanting to show them a good time in Washington, D.C. It's quite something. And then the way they're doing it is saying, hey, you know, you could be open to a lawsuit here from foreign countries based on this JASTA bill. And we think it would be a good idea for you to bring it up when we set up this meeting with your congressman.
Yeah.
And so there, these veterans are thinking, oh, sure, you know, thank you for this great treatment you've shown me, and yeah, I'll take care of that for you, like that, just completely,
right.
Almost unwittingly. So this is being reported on now too, and it's the thing that to take note of here, Don, is the extremes by which Saudi Arabia is going to avoid being subjected to the rigors of court and discovery. What does that say?
Yeah. And finally, looking at what's been happening in the Middle East, say from, you know, Brzezinski's first public meeting with what would become al-Qaeda, ultimately, the Mujahideen that was organized in Afghanistan, the old feudal lords who were afraid of having their lands taken by a communist government, that ultimately became al-Qaeda, that ultimately led to the al-Qaeda that we know today that's been fighting on the ground, say in Yemen, in opposition to, you know, to Yemen, to the people of Yemen. In Syria, the troops that they were able to throw into the mix, along with the Qatari regulars in Libya, with the U.S. Air Force conducting airstrikes, Syria being blocked from that same fate by the vetoes of Russia and China, but a war by al-Qaeda and other groups financed by Saudi Arabia largely. Suddenly, when Trump comes in on a promise of no more regime change and nation building and such, talks about allying with Russia to deal with the terrorists in Syria and Iraq and elsewhere, we start to see the U.S. Air Force, rather than guiding Saudi air raids on Yemen, bombing al-Qaeda in Yemen. And we see the situation change on the ground in Syria with the Russians, Iranians, and Syrian government recapturing Aleppo and trying to take Raqqa and defending Damascus and recovering a lot of property. The facts on the ground have changed since Trump's election. And even though there are still many elements of the Obama administration and the deep state at the controls, the policy has clearly shifted to where al-Qaeda is actually treated as an enemy on the battlefield. And part of what we're seeing in response is in response to that fact.
Yeah, it is quite a hornet's nest to try and... straighten out in terms of understanding the dynamics, the geopolitics of that whole region, and Russia's role. There's the polar opposites there with Iran, the influence of Iran in the region, Hezbollah, in their support for Assad in Syria. And on the opposite side of the spectrum is, of course, Saudi Arabia and the U.S. Operating through Saudi Arabia as our proxy, and because Saudi Arabia is behind many of the rebel groups, funding them, financing, training, and facilitating all of that. When it comes to the opposition groups in Syria.
Your website.
Yes, HR14.org is the website that has the information about the 28 pages and the Saudi JASTA issues that we've been discussing. HR14.org. Please join our Facebook group to be part of our ongoing actions.
Thank you very much. It's Les Jamison, we'll talk with you again.
Thank you, Don.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.